go. And the music stops, and that means we've got to talk. And we're going to talk. That's what we're going to do today on Drive Through HR. This is William Tincup, and I have a fantastic guest on today. I can't wait to actually spend a little time with him. We're going to spend time with Tim, but we're going to do that right in front of a live audience because that's how, you know, that's how we roll. That's how we do. So without any further ado, Tim, how are you doing today, brother?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for asking. Like you were saying, it's a great Tuesday, even if
right.
It doesn't feel like Tuesday to you.
Well, yeah, the best thing about Tuesday is you made it through Monday. That's how you kind of you got to kind of look at it that way. It's like, whew, whatever I did, thank God, that day, now I'm at this day. And it's one more day closer to Wednesday. And all you got to do is get to hump day, and then everything's downhill after that. But
exactly.
Tuesday's today, it's a reprieve, you get past Monday, you're good. So do us a favor, if you don't mind, introduce yourself to the audience.
Where do I start? I am Tim Baker. I'm a human resources consultant and coach. I work with small to mid-sized businesses for their HR needs. To outsource some of their HR, to look for some strategic advice, that sort of thing. And as I was saying in the sort of pre-show, that's one of my jobs. And my other job is anchored at home as the stay-at-home parent. So that is that's my life. Those two things right there, pretty much.
And both of them have their own levels of difficulty. Let's tackle the first one real quick, but I definitely actually want to talk about the parenting one as well. What are you seeing at HR consulting? Like, what's if you were to say the three or four issues that you kind of see routinely that kind of pop up from folks that you're working with? What do those look like?
That's a good question. There's you know, one of the, and I said this once before when I was on the show a while back, is the small mid-sized business, as we all know, they've got small budgets. They're oftentimes the owner or whomever is wearing a few different hats, and they're trying to do as much as they can themselves, and maybe very proficient in one area, not so much in the next, or maybe a little bit of a jack of all trades. But I see and have over the years seen that, and we all know this, the HR issues, that'll just kind of work itself out. I'll look after that later kind of thing until something kind of goes wrong. Or they get so far, so deep in that it's difficult to then get out. And then they're looking for someone. You know, I've always tried to approach my network of business owners and whatever and say, hey, you know what? You know me, I know you. And I'm not saying, here, sign a contract. Let's get to know each other a bit better. And if you're looking for that strategic advice or that consulting, or you've got just a one-off issue that's come up and you want to know what to do, then let's partner together and make it a long relationship so that, it is. It's just that. It's a relationship. And, that's one of the challenges that I've found is I call it the sell or call it what you want, but convincing that small to mid-sized business owner that, especially a small business, that it's worth your while to get to know me. It's worth your while to get to partner with me. You're not locked into some big contract. It's not going to cost you. I don't charge that much. It's not going to cost you a lot. It's that peace of mind. And where I see the most issues when they do call is. It's an employee relations issue. It's, somebody's working the system. My staff is, I just had one recently where she said, I can already see my staff is plotting against me, blah, blah, blah. They're rotating, calling in sick on Friday. And I'm like, okay. So, it's always when something happens, I find. I'll talk to them before, hey, what do you have in place? This is what might happen. And then they're like, yeah, no, everything's good. And then it's not good. And they're like, hey, Tim, I said, I need a call eventually.
Yeah, the fire, it went off in the second floor. I was wondering if you could come over. How much is compliance like, you know, like we're joking about, you know, something went wrong. Is that generally compliance? Is it a lawsuit? Is it like what drives them to then finally, if they didn't do anything preemptively and they were doing things that are reactively, what's driving that?
I find it's usually something that's impacted the business owner's ability to operate on a daily or weekly basis. So whether it be somebody's performance and of course then somebody else has got to pick up the slack or they do. So when all of a sudden, or it could be a compliance thing where they, you know, wrongful dismissal or something, that's pretty blatant when you're delivered with a letter. But oftentimes it's, hey, I'm really having a problem here because I've got somebody, you know, on my team, and, you know, people are complaining because they got to pick up the slack from them. They're not on their way. They're not whatever. And they don't know what to do. What should I do? You know, I find it's usually that. If something's impacted their ability to work in their business rather than on their business. And that's usually when I get somebody reaching out to me and saying, I've got a problem employee, I don't know what to do, it's affecting my relationship with my customers or the other employees, something like that. Or, again, it's a compliance thing where they say, I just got delivered a letter that says that I wrongfully dismissed somebody. And then when I look and I say, yeah, you kind of did, you know? So... And I don't, you know, those times where I look at, you know, partnering with an employment lawyer if it's something more serious. But then after that stuff is settled, then we take a look and say, why don't we try to make sure that doesn't happen again as much as possible? And they're like, yeah, let's do that.
So if you could go into an organization, let's say preemptively, somebody said, hey, we're just now starting. We've got 3 employees. What should we lay down? What would you do? How would you, first of all, I know that most of your business is reacting, but and I'm sure you've had some projects where you got in there proactively or preemptively. What would you lay down as your foundation?
Well, that's a good question because it's, you know, people will immediately, I think, I want to make sure all my ducks are in a row. I want to make sure that I'm in compliance. I'm like, yeah, you do need to do that. One of my real recent clients is actually based out of San Francisco, but he incorporated a company here in Ontario. And great business model. I understood exactly what he was doing because I had a little bit of experience with it. And I said, okay, let's start putting the pieces into place. But at the same time that we're doing that, let's take a look at what that might look like a year from now, 3 years from now, and how, let's try to anticipate as much as we can what how that might impact how you want to, you know, build your business, build your culture. What's that going to look like? You don't want to run into any roadblocks 6 months to a year from now and say, I wish I had it done. I mean, we don't have a crystal ball. We can't see everything. But what I'll take a look at first is let's do a bit of an audit. Let's see what you have in place right now. Let me speak to some of your, you know, your leaders in your organization and your managers, yours, and some of your teams. Let me see what they think about it. So it may look like it's working. Yeah, we've got that process in place and it's current along. And it might be, but when you start talking to people, like, it doesn't really work. So the compliance bit, that good foundation upon which you can build what you really want everything to look and feel like in that environment, in that atmosphere, in that culture. And a lot of it's the boring stuff, little tick box. Do you have this? Check. Do you have this? Nope. Okay, you need that. And it's really, I look at the beginning part as, and that's usually a great entry point, is saying to someone, it's easier for them to understand when I say, we're going to do a little bit of an audit. They get that. All right, let's see what I have. And then I lay it out like a menu. Here's your high-risk stuff. Here's your low-risk and some in between. And then here's your sort of wish list. And make it like a bit of an a la carte menu. They see that a little bit more clearly than, let's make everything happy and fun and whatever, because they're like, how do you do that? That will come, but that's not a good entry point for someone like me when you're talking to small businesses, is to try to sell the, I know it sounds awful, but to say, because we all want this, but it's difficult to say, let me come in and I'll make your company great and we'll do all these wonderful things. Yeah, but it's not tangible. It's not concrete. You need something concrete to say, yeah, can you come in and do that? And then you start building the relationship at the same time, that value add, the trust, and then you kind of go from there.
So I got a couple of things in there. So it's great content. How do you know when it's over? So, I mean, that sounds great on the ramp up to build value, et cetera. But it's like, it's almost like psychologists or analysts or something like that. Is it forever? Do you always need to be there? Do they feel like you need to be there forever? Are they entering into a relationship that never ends? Or is there some natural moments when you kind of re-up or part ways or whatever?
Yeah, that's always the you don't ever want to say, all right, I'm done. That's good luck. See you in the afterlife or whatever.
<It's>,
or whatever. I don't know where that came from, but it's I will even say to someone at a certain point, listen, you've got everything that you need in place right now that can be looked after by, if you hire like an HR administrator or someone, HR coordinator or whatever, let me help you hire that right person. Now, a lot of people say, well, you're just kind of putting yourself out of work. Well, no, not really, because your business is still growing, and that HR person may be a little bit younger, newer, greener, and they're going to need someone to be a bit of a mentor, a coach, and consultant. So I'll continue that relationship. I don't know if it ever really ends. I guess it could if they said, you know what, Tim, I've had it with you. You're terrible. I don't ever want to talk to you again. I've yet to have that happen, fortunately. I think people like me. So that's great. But I don't see that relationship necessarily ever ending because I'm always there and I always let them know. My most recent client, we've sort of back and forth talked a little bit, but I haven't done much with him lately because he's at a point where everything's okay for now. Now, I will plant some seeds and I'll say, have you thought about this? Oh, no, I haven't. Well, here's a couple things to think about and I'll get back to you. There's always something. There's always something that as you're doing something else you can mention and they haven't thought about. And it's a little bit of, call it upselling, call it insight, call it whatever you want. But
right.
I don't know. I don't ever like to see that relationship end. I'm always there. And you may never hear from somebody again, or maybe not for a long time, or maybe a week later.
Well, I'm always, because, you know, I care. Obviously, my world's all about HR and recruiting technology. How much of what you do and interact with is about technology and how much of it's not?
I'm a bit of a techie. Yeah, I embrace my tech geekiness, and I love that. I always have. However, I have not yet done a lot of that with any of my clients. Now, when I talk about my clients, it's not a huge, long list of clients. I mean, I'll be honest, right, because it's been fairly recently when I started doing this. But I will always talk about, I always try to keep up to date with what's out there, what technology, what. I worked for a very short period. This kind of ties into the whole success and failure thing a bit, but for about 3 months with an HR tech company, not in an HR role, though. And I've actually with two. So I like to know what's out there and kind of how it works, but what the purpose is, so that I can suggest to somebody, hey, if you're looking for an easy to use, you're just kind of starting out with a tool, here's two or three that you can look into. But I'm not doing a lot of that yet. I'd like to, because there's some great tools out there. I look at efficiency, and I like looking at why are you doing this like this, and it takes you this long to do it, and this many people, when you can do it like this? And save your time, your money, and focus on other things. I'm like that at home, too, unfortunately. It drives my kids nuts, but I'm always looking at how can we make something more efficient. So the tech side, really, I mean, that goes without saying that there are lots of tools out there that that can be used, and I like to keep abreast of what's available so I can suggest to people, hey, you might want to look into this. And if you want to look into it further, I know a bit about it. I've talked to, you know, somebody, I know somebody there or whatever, and yeah.
How much of what you run into in HR right now is run off of Excel? Like if you were to look across all of the things that you do, comp, you know, hiring, you know, whatever the bits are, how much of it is actually run in Microsoft Excel?
Yeah. Still probably more than either people think or people might admit. because I think it's still, don't get me wrong, I love Microsoft Excel. I don't use it much anymore, but I even had I somehow connected with a guy in the Netherlands that teaches at a university there that is like an Excel expert. And anytime I needed to build a formula, I would email him or something. And he'd go, hey, Tim, how's it going? I don't remember what his name was now, but somebody said to me, well, how did you get in contact? He's in the Netherlands? Yeah. I think that people still... it's been ingrained that, oh, we've got to put together a chart or a spreadsheet or something to calculate this. I'm just going to open up Excel and build something. And then once you've done that, you start adding to it, you don't really think much about, could I be doing this another way? Or is there a tool that can do this for me that might actually do three other things that I want to do? I think it's almost a... It's just a default I think people still think about. I see. I still do that sometimes, too. Oh, I'll just go do a little spreadsheet. And it
right.
And a lot of times drives me nuts because I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. There's a tool for that. And it's cool, and let's use that.
Yeah, it becomes a crutch in some ways that it's, you know how to use it. You know how to bend it around. You know all those things. It's like, well, how else do it in Excel to be done? Let's go into failure for a little bit real quick. And really, I think the important part for me about this failure and success, failure and what did we learn, it's everyone goes through failure. It's whether or not we admit it or all that other stuff. It's what did you learn? How did you turn it around? What came out of it on the other side? So take us either into your most recent or biggest failure and then kind of and then what you learned from it.
Yeah, I've got in front of me a whole list of things. I started all the way back in high school on this list, but I'm not going to go all the way back there right now. one of the most recent ones, you know, I look at my successes and failures as a bit of a roller coaster. It is for everybody, and it's up and down. And when I look at my career too, there are some quote failures that are pretty obvious. And you learn something very definite where it's like, yeah, that wasn't good, or that I shouldn't have made that decision and I won't do it again. But there are some where it's just kind of like, yeah, I didn't do so well at that. So maybe put it in that failure category. So the next time I do it, I'm going to do it better, or I'm going to change a little bit. And I see the two like that. One most recent for me was, there was an opportunity for me to take a role with an HR tech company as a project manager. Great company. Both the CEO and I both understood that I had never been in a project management role, like a pure project management role. So she knew that, and I knew that. And I knew we both knew that we were taking a bit of a risk. But we had connected in other ways such that we sort of knew, or she knew me, and thought that it might be a good fit. So it turned out it wasn't. And that was fine. Because by that point, this was only in the last few years, that by that point, I knew how to handle or manage that, quote, failure. I knew me enough by that point that this didn't work out, but it's not because of me. It's because it wasn't the right fit. And it's not something that I would do again. And I'll know the next time if an opportunity comes up to analyze a little bit more and say, that's got too much of this, and I know from experience that I shouldn't make that decision. As a matter of fact, we're actually this company that I was with for that short time. I'm doing some work with them again now as a consultant. So we kept the relationship going. So it had nothing to do with anything other than it's not working out the way that we thought it might. So by that point, I knew and I could accept it and handle it. Earlier on in my life, when things like that would happen, it would be more, oh my gosh, it's me. There's something about I can't do this, or I'm not able to do this, and actually I listened to your show yesterday, you were talking about feedback and stuff, where I would say, oh my God, what are people going to think of me? And I think that amplifies that sense of failure more. Everybody's different, but for me, used to be, what are other people going to think? What are they going to think of me? And blah, blah, blah. And this for me, it started back even in university, deciding what I wanted to do kind of thing. Until I got to a point where I said, you know what, I don't give a crap what other people think? No, it's not really that. Well, sort of is. What did I learn from that, or what happened there? What is it that I can learn to make sure I make a better decision, or in some cases a choice, the next time? So that was one more recently that was very clear. That was not the best decision. I took a bit of a risk, and glad I did, because there were some other things that came out of it for me now. Actually, still working with this company a little bit.
How fast did you know? Because first of all, it's a wonderful story. How fast did you know that it wasn't the right fit?
I knew probably about 6 weeks in.
When do you think they knew that it wasn't a fit?
Probably right around the same time.
Okay, cool. Okay. That's interesting.
And
it's unusual.
It was an interesting situation because it wasn't that either of us gave up on trying to make it work. Or seeing how you know, what else can we do? You know, what is it? And because we both talk to each other and create some expectations, or let's make sure we're clear on the expectations. I guess it just got to the point where I said, not only, it wasn't that I wasn't able to do it, because I think that anybody can really, for the most part, do anything. It just wasn't the
right.
It wasn't me. And I mean, I remember experiencing that when I worked when I was in operations management before I went into HR, and we used to hire young people between the ages of about 15 and 16 years old. It was a movie theater company. You know, we had to hire the right person. We could teach them to pop popcorn and work at a cash till. That was not an issue. But if they couldn't do it without being nice to customers and work well with others, well, then that wasn't the right person. And that was, you know, in this case for me and in this career experience, was that I could have done it. I don't think I would have really have enjoyed doing it. But I had never done that sort of thing before. And I wanted to try it. And we both knew that. So it wasn't like either of our expectations were off.
Right.
We both
there's two striking things for me. You both went in eyes wide open, and you, okay, it happened, and now you're on the other side of it, and you're friends. You know what I mean? Like, there's something that can be said about, hey, listen, we took a risk. They risked as much as you do. You know, it's not like one person had a proportionally or disproportionate risk. You both took a risk. You both went into it eyes wide open. And when you do that, you both knew about the same time. And instead of hiding from that or fighting through it or, you know, hating each other, you said, you know what, we're adults. We took a risk. It didn't work out. Let's be friends. Let's figure out how we unravel this thing.
It was probably one of the most enjoyable failures I've ever had.
That's cool. Let me get your take on two things real quick. What do you think about the construct of hire slow and fire fast? Do you subscribe to that? Do you believe it's, you know, great or stupid, or what's your bit there?
Oh, now, you know, yeah, that's a great question. In my experience, my personal experience, not just, you know, sort of being on the candidate or the whatever side, the employee side, actually from both sides. I don't know, that's a tough question. I don't think you can kind of put everything into a box like that. There's times where you've said, yeah, I know that's the person. That's the person we want. And you know pretty early on. And other times it's going to take some time. I haven't had extensive experience in the area of recruitment. I've done some corporately, both the public and private sector and whatever, and doing some consulting with clients on how they should do their process and stuff. When it comes to the firing part, I've changed a bit in the last few years, I think, but I've always been, how do I put it? I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I like to give them a chance, second chances, that kind of thing. And, you know, when someone is not, say, performing, or manager comes and says, we've got to get rid of this person, they're terrible, whatever. All right, well, let's take a look. Why? Is it our fault?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Maybe it's us. It's not them.
That's unusual. I can tell you how unusual that is, because most people, it's just too easy to blame the person. It's so easy to just go, it's lazy. You know, it's like, oh, it's their fault. Well, wait a minute. You know, we put them in a new role. When they were hired, they did this role. Now we put them in a new role. We gave them no skills, you know, no training. There was no leadership development. And we're shocked that they're not doing great. Are we really shocked? But I can tell you how rare that is. It's just so easy today to just give up on the person.
Yeah, I'm not, by nature, I'm not like that at all. I know there are times, and I've talked to clients where they've said, here's what's happened up to this point. You're just like, you know what? Pay them what they're owed. Let's do this right. We'll get a hold of it, and let's just get rid of them, because it's been not good for so long. You're not going to turn it around.
No.
But you know what? There was a great success story that a friend of mine actually called me, and he said, here's what's happening. It's his own business. Long story short, the person wasn't performing. They didn't know what to do. They couldn't get rid of her when they wanted to, because they were short-staffed already. They were kind of on the hook. But now what do we do? And now she's saying she's going on mat leave or something. I'm like, yeah, now you really got to be careful. So I said, why don't you sit down and talk to her? Find out, maybe she doesn't know what's expected or the expectation. Have a bit of a chat. Let her know that what you're seeing is not meeting her expectations. And let me know what happens kind of from there. So I hadn't talked to him for a while, and he said, yeah, all right, we'll have that sit down with her and talk. And when I did talk to him, I said, hey, you know, whatever happened? How did that work out? And he said, I don't know what we'd do without her now. She's one of our best people. And he said, I don't know. He said, I would have, what if I had just let her go or terminated her? We wouldn't have her now. I'm like, that's an awesome story. I'm so glad it worked out like that. But by nature, I've always been like that. Take a look first, make sure that you're not doing anything wrong or you're missing things that you could be doing right. Give them all the opportunities to succeed, and then if they don't.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I wish. Well, it's and also you could triage that coming out of it. Is this for cause or not? So if somebody steals something, you don't have to go through any of that process or whatever, right? But if there's a clear line to cause, okay, just pursue within compliance and document and do your bit. But if it's not for cause and it's subjective, really, at the end of the day, it's a subjective. We're no longer. Tammy's not working out. Don's not working out. Then I think you're right. Let's prove it to ourselves that it's not us. Let's actually do that first. I love that. That's actually really strong. Last question for me is the difference between Canadian HR and let's say North American or HR in the United States. What do you see? Is there anything different? First of all, I don't even want to assume that there is differences. Is it the same, or are there some things that are really substantively different?
Well, there's quite a bit that's different when it comes to employment. I don't think that there's a lot different with HR or what we think about when we have conversations about workplace culture and performance management and things like that, except when it intersects with sort of the employment and the compliance and the law. One of the fundamental, I actually worked for a firm a few years ago that was a third-party employer, so employed people here in Canada that were doing work for a company in the U.S. So they've been employed legally. And so that offered me a lot of, that's where I first really started to see a lot of the difference between Canada and the U.S. Because we'd have our clients in the U.S. saying, we have to do what if we want to do this? Why do we have to do all that? Why is there legislation on that? I don't get that. So one of the biggest things is at-will employment. And California is probably the most progressive state from my knowledge as far as legislation, well, progressive, however you want to say it, depending on people's views on it. But we had a lot of clients in the U.S. that said, you can't just walk in and say, Dave, you're fired, see you later. No, you can't do that here at all.
Well, you can.
You can, but then you're going to pay a lot of money because they're going to come back and do the letter.
Yep.
So I would go ahead and do that, but it's different from province to province, but it's fairly similar. It's really around the employment part that I see the biggest. But then when we talk about the things like performance management, we talk about workplace culture and all those things. It's the application of how you're going to do those things will be a little bit different because you have to work around all these other things. It's fairly employee friendly in Canada. So you have to be careful. It always comes out when we talk about this is termination.
But, yeah, it's not hiring. It's like France and Germany. It's not hiring. It's if you part ways, how does that happen? And I like that every country goes about this a little bit differently. It actually shows the tapestry of HR is as broad as it really is that there is no one way. And it's okay from country to country and province to province and state to state. It's actually nice that there's differences. I mean, it's complex and it's hard, but at the end of the day, I actually like that. But then again, I don't have to navigate the compliance issues with it, so of course I like it. Listen, we're running low on time, and I didn't even get to some of the parenting stuff. We're gonna have to have you back on so we can, because I really want to actually do that show as well. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Bigger, fantastic, smart, just a genuinely nice guy. Tim, thanks for coming on today. Thanks for sharing some of your wisdom. And thanks for everyone for listening to Drive Through HR. So thank you, Tim.
Thanks so much for having me. It was fantastic.
All right, brother. Have a wonderful Tuesday.
You too.
All right, brother.